Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It is great to be with you on this Friday from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And being Friday, it is time, all of you in the flock, to go over to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. It is not called the beverage supermarket for nothing. If you're going to head into the weekend, if you're going to head a week from now into the 4th of July, it is imperative, absolutely imperative, that you stock up. Imports, domestics, microbrews, soft drinks, snacks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, pickle bar, whatever. Okay? It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I believe Sarah is in today because Kyle had to go other places. I don't believe I hear Buhner in the roll call today.
I don't see Buhner over there. He might have gone to the beverage outlet a little bit early.
I don't blame him. Do you blame him after doing four straight days of this?
I'd
be over there myself.
Yeah, and you both had stints on the mark this week.
Yes, I was on this morning. I could totally confuse Lawrence. It was all, he said, well, I want to talk about this. And we never really talked about it. So we actually went in a different direction. He said, no, that's good. That's good. Because I ended up talking, because today was the last day of the O'Bannon trial in Oakland, California, which I had a reporter say to me, he says, I hear you talk about the O'Bannon trial. He says, you know, you got to understand, he says, people aren't interested in that. And I said, it's not my job to sit here all the time and talk about what everybody might be interested in. I said, I've got to talk about something that I can guarantee you at some point they are going to be extremely interested in. I said, you need to know ahead of time information. He goes, nah. He says, look, he says, people want to talk about the TMZ stuff. And I said, no. I said, they may want to talk about it. I said, but this is an issue where the ramifications of this could be exponential. And when I mean it could be exponential. And the reason it could be is as follows. If this leads to paying student-athletes, and let's face it, when you're talking about paying student-athletes, Sarah, they're talking about paying football and men's basketball players. Okay? It's football and men's basketball players because those are the sports that are on TV, that are glorified, that, you know, that the TV contracts are paying for, the radio contracts paying for. You know, let's take it from a radio point of view. For example, here at WKOK. We carry the Penn State Sports Network. We carry Penn State football. We carry Penn State men's basketball. But we don't carry field hockey. We don't carry softball. We don't carry baseball. Right? That's not what we do. All right? Because those are not Penn State. That's not part of the Penn State Sports Network contract. Part of the Penn State Sports Network contract, though, is also to part of their contract is to get corporate partners. And you'll hear every once in a while on the Penn State Sports Network a radio commercial with me narrating it as to who the Penn State corporate partners happen to be. And there's, I think one's called the Blue White Partners and the other one's, you know, I can't remember the name of the other, but Blue White's the second level and the other one's Keystone Partners. That's the highest level. Well, that's also part of what Learfield does. They're in charge of getting the corporate partners lined up. Well, what do the corporate partners do? Well, they're the highest givers that you're looking for in the athletic department. They're the ones that are on the ribbon board. They're the ones on the scoreboard. You know, they're at the highest level of giving. Well, where does the money go? Well,
obviously it must go to football and men's basketball. I mean, and that's not the case. It's the way it's distributed.
Now, does the NCAA need to make dramatic adjustments in what they're doing? There is no question the NCAA needs to make dramatic adjustments in what they're doing. I mean, no question. But I think the adjustment has to be made within the model. And I know at Penn State, there are a lot of people at Penn State that, or follow Penn State, that are Penn State fans, that are so angry at Mark Emmert, and justifiably so, because let's face it, when you go out there and you have a press conference like he did 2 years ago, and when you act like you're spiking the ball like he did 2 years ago, you're darn right you're going to make a fan base completely and thoroughly furious. All right? And I understand that anger. And you're mad at the NCAA, and I understand that. I mean, you know, you don't think I'm not upset at what's happened? I mean, you know, you as fans are affected, okay? It's not only affected me as a broadcaster, where I've had to spend a lot of time, you know, talking about this going through at the same time, but let's be honest with you. I mean, you know, they knocked them out of a bowl game, okay, for Jack Ham and me and so forth and the entire group. I mean, it hit in the pocketbook too, all right? So, furious? Yeah, furious. But I'm looking at the overall model of what is going on. And when you look at the overall model, you don't need the, quote, model to fail. You need the model to be adjusted. And it's too easy right now for those who sit in studios and don't get their hands dirty to say that football and men's basketball players should be paid. That's too easy. You have to do a little bit of work to properly inform your audience. Sitting in the tower and looking over the landscape and saying, look, they're paid. They're earning all this money off their sweat. The money is not going to an offshore Grand Cayman's account where some fat cat's getting rich off of it. Right? The money is going to make sure that you have all the other sports too. That's where the money is going. I've tried to explain that principle over and over again, and I will continue to explain that principle. And this guy, and I'm not going to tell you which member of the media it was a newspaper writer who also does a talk show. He says, I'll be honest with you, people are not interested in talking about this. And I think that's wrong. I think people are interested. And you have to put it in terms that people are interested in. So yesterday, I finally framed it in such a way where I think it piqued the interest of a lot of people. And that is as follows. For all of you people who love the sport of wrestling, and right now there are 76 wrestling programs in Division I right now. Now, number one, you're shocked to hear there are 76 wrestling programs. I'm sure you thought there were a lot more than that. I'm talking in Division I now. I'm not talking about 2 and 3 and so forth. I'm talking about Division I wrestling programs. When Boston University dropped the sport this past spring, it went from 77 down to 76. Well, here are the issues you have to deal with. If you are paying football and men's basketball players, all right, is there money available to pay them? Oh, sure, there'll be money available to pay them. Unfortunately, that also means you're going to have to drop not just a couple sports, a lot of sports, in order to balance the books to make it work. A scholarship is payment. I've talked about that. Grant money is payment. I've talked about that. Okay? I was against stipends before. Now I am for stipends. And I'm going to talk about $2,000 per academic year spread out over 10 months. You know, June and July, no stipend. start in August and take you through May, which is the natural academic year. So at $200 a month over 10 months, that's $50 per week as a stipend added on to whatever grant money that you have. The problem, of course, that I've now realized in, again, you have to have your ability to get your hands dirty. In talking to some student athletes, they have told me that, look, my parents needed the money, so we took the grant money and I sent it home. Well, that changed everything for me in terms of how I thought and looked at. Now, obviously, it's a choice that's made. I mean, that's a choice that is made, but the family needs it. So I understand that. So what I'm trying to do is be fair about this, because the value of a scholarship, is very high. When you walk out of a university debt-free, very important. When you're talking about thousands of dollars being spent on your behalf for your scholarship, your room, your books, and now the added expense of 24/7 food, and that's what you're going to get, 24/7 food, which is perfect. That's exactly what the athletes need. It's part of their training. You're saying, what does the athlete get out of it? Well, the athlete can get out of it, obviously, an education, but they also, if they have a possibility to pro career, they get, I don't know, free coaching, free training, free weight training, free food, everything like that. I mean, everything that can advance you to the next level, free film work, you get all of that. Okay? Family doesn't have to pay a dime for it. I've had people say, well, how about the free market? Let the free market work. I think, Sarah, you know, in listening to me, I have always been very much a conservative free market person. All right? But in sports, we have discovered, see, the difference in the free market in sports is as follows. Okay? If you're in business, right, you want to be number one in your business, and really, you don't mind if the other guy goes out of business. That you're so dominant, you put the other guy out of business. Sports isn't like that. The reason is that you can't go out there and have a series of inter-squad scrimmages. Right? You need to have your competition survive and thrive, because it's good for the overall business. Because it's exciting and attracts fans. It attracts viewers to television. Well, the college model is football and men's basketball make money so that you can thrive in 29 other sports too. And I'm telling you, in a Title IX world, which isn't going away, wrestling would be in trouble.
We welcome you back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Come on, your job was to hunt down Buhner like a dog.
I know.
And nobody knows where Buhner is.
We can't, no.
I go on the mark this morning. They're telling me what a great guest Buhner was during the week. You know, I felt like I let him down. Well, yesterday was the NBA draft. Sarah doesn't have a favorite NBA team. There's not one in Baltimore.
You know me too well.
There used to be one in Baltimore.
Right.
Right? Now they're the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. And but the NBA draft took place yesterday, which we'll talk about in a little bit. The NHL draft is tonight. Also another league without a team in Baltimore.
I know.
I mean, you're just baseball, football people. I mean, and lacrosse.
Yeah, baseball, football, and lacrosse, of course. So
yes, I mean, that's what you are.
Yeah, we've got that going for us. But I wouldn't mind having a hockey team or a NBA team come back. Yeah. Bring the Bullets back. Come on.
you also had an ABA team. They were called the Baltimore Claws.
Oh,
okay, like as in lobster claw.
Yeah, right.
They were called the Baltimore. They lasted 11 games and folded.
Doesn't sound that well.
That's not good.
That's not good.
So since the NHL draft is tonight, we need Josh Yowie from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review to come in. Josh, your job, save the show.
Gentlemen, how are you?
I need you to save the show.
Sounds like it.
All right. So, all right. Mike Johnson, okay, tell us, his reputation is that of being, you know, his 6 years in Portland, a rather wide-open coach. Accurate description?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of ways to describe Mike Johnson. In terms of how the guy coaches, he's all about offensive hockey and skilled hockey and winning high-scoring games. So from an entertainment value standpoint, when you put that together with the Crosbys and Malkins of the world, it sounds like a natural fit. I don't know if Pittsburgh, the city, has been wild about the selection simply because he's, you know, a junior coach coming to the NHL. It's not unprecedented, but it is unusual. But from what we've heard about the guy, from an X's and O's standpoint, he's pretty good.
It sounds like, though, that they were denied at the altar of other options. So in the end, who did they, quote, lose out on before going this direction?
Well, Bill Peters, who became Carolina's coach, and Willie Desjardins, who became Vancouver's coach, were both guys they were very interested in. Desjardins' situation became a little more public because the famous general manager, Jim Rutherford, came right out and admitted that they couldn't come to a contract agreement. And the problem has been the Penguins haven't been willing to give very lengthy deals to these coaches they've spoken with. And in Willie Desjardins' case, they only offered him a 2-year contract with a third year club option. And that's not a lot of job security, especially as frequently as NHL coaches get fired. So Desjardins really balked at that, but they gave Mike Johnson a 3-year deal, and he was okay with it. And it's fair to mention that he got into a lot of trouble in Portland, a lot of sanctions against that team. They do not have a first-round draft pick in Portland for the next couple of years, so I wouldn't be shocked if he was looking to get out.
Gee, Josh, I've never heard of that, leaving before the posse shows up.
I read his the list of everything he got in trouble for, and I said, my God, I think the Penguins are hiring Jackie Sherrill to be their coach. But I figured Penn State people would like that joke.
Yeah, no. But also, Rick Tocchet's going to be a part of this, isn't he?
He sure is a big part, in fact. And the funny thing about this, you know, this wasn't my job. Penguins ownership decided weeks ago that Rick Tocchet was going to be on the staff in some form, which is a little unusual. He and Mario Lemieux were very close. And, you know, Tocchet's been a head coach in the league. He's been an assistant for years also. So I certainly don't have a problem with it. And the Penguins came right out and admitted they think they've been kind of a soft team the last few years, and they think the coaching staff was a little too buddy-buddy with the players. And while the media likes Rick Tocchet because he's a great guy to deal with, he's no nonsense when it comes to the way he played the game and the way he coaches the game. So he clearly has been brought in to effectively be the bad cop, if you will.
How important now for him personally, how important on the recovery scale for him personally in this sport is this job coming up for him?
Well, for Rick, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. Rick's been through a lot, as I'm sure everybody knows. He was involved in a very public gambling situation. Wayne Gretzky's wife was involved. Didn't do any jail time. He pleaded guilty, had a couple of years probation. Then he only had a bad experience as Tampa's head coach. That didn't work out either, and you put all that together, and you know, I asked Rick if he ever thought he was going to be in the NHL again, and he was very firm. He said, yeah, I always believed I would, but he also said when he got up to that podium to meet with the media in Pittsburgh yesterday that he was surprised by how emotional he felt because you know, he has been through a lot in the 19 years that he's been away from the Penguins organization. A lot of good times and a lot of bad times, but Penguins are giving him a pretty big chance here. And like I said, it doesn't hurt to be friends with Mario. And those two have been really close for a long time. And, yeah, everyone will kind of be watching that to see how that turns out. But it sounds like for an assistant coach, he's going to have a lot of power. I mean, he's almost an associate head coach, if you will.
Back to Mike Johnson for a moment. He has at least some NHL experience a while back. I think it was with Vancouver and the LA Kings at some point. How much does he admit that maybe the league has changed since he's been there?
Well, yeah, he was with LA for 6 years as an assistant in Vancouver for two, and then the last 6 years he's been in junior hockey. And yeah, I mean, we asked him not only, you know, how much has the game changed systematically, but also, you know, you've been in junior hockey with 17, 18-year-old kids the last 6 years. Now you're dealing with millionaires and arguably the two best players in the league. Now, that's quite a jump. And we asked him what he thought about it, and I thought his answer was a good one. He said, I know there will be some guys on this team that are going to play 30 minutes a night, and there will be some guys that will play 10 minutes a night. And he said, I'm going to make it very clear what their roles are, and we're going to communicate and have a good relationship. I just liked how he handled himself yesterday. He certainly doesn't seem rattled by the situation. It is a very high-profile job with extraordinarily high expectations, but he's got kind of a coolness about him. He used to do his own radio show. He likes dealing with the media. He doesn't strike me as somebody who will be affected by the spotlight at all.
You try to learn at every job that you get along the way. What did he indicate that he learned out of his six-year Portland experience that he thinks made him a better coach?
Well, that's a really good question. He learned how to deal with great players even on a smaller scale. If you look at his rosters, all kinds of NHL talent at that level, they always had a lot of talent. You know, a cynic might say, well, of course they had a lot of talent. They were buying players. But I don't think that was completely the case. But he learned how to deal with skilled hockey players, and he talked about that. And how he likes to win playing a skilled game, a puck possession game. Now, if he were going to become the coach of the Nashville Predators or the New Jersey Devils, that might not work. That's not how those teams are built to play. But when you look at the Penguins, you say, yes, they should be a skilled team and a puck possession team. So his system seems to match, and he always has gotten the most out of his stars at that level. And even in Vancouver, Marcus Naslund's best years, that he was somebody who was very close with him and an assistant of his. So, you know, if you're going to be the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, you must get the most out of Crosby and Malkin. And Dan Bylsma didn't always do that in the last couple of years. At times he did, but certainly not always. And that's going to be his number one job. So it seems like he knows how to coach talented players, and that could be a big thing.
The NBA draft, of course, you know, big deal for a lot of people. How much should people even care about the NHL draft?
Well, people don't really care about the draft in terms of who is being acquired in the draft and in the draft itself. What's happened here in the last 5 years since the salary cap and the CBA have really changed the game, we're seeing just an enormous amount of trades. It's almost become like the trade deadline on draft day. That's what people watch for. Usually my paper has one person covering the draft. We have three of us on our way to Philadelphia right now because there's a chance of a lot of things to go down tomorrow night. That there could be a really significant trade involving a big game with the Penguins. It wouldn't surprise anyone. And, you know, of course, it's Jim Rutherford's first draft as Penguins general manager, so that throws a different look into it as well. And free agency is only a few days away, so some rumors will be popping up, I'm sure. But it's become kind of the draft and the trade deadline all wrapped into one. Now, is the draft itself exciting? You know, drafting some kid that might play in 4 years in the league? Not really. It certainly isn't like the NBA or football. I mean, I think the Major League Baseball and hockey drafts are certainly a step back in that regard.
And the Penguins, by the way, draft at 22 in the opening round, and Florida gets the first pick. Hey, Josh, thanks so much. Appreciate the time and really for you saving the show.
Well, I was having some phone problems earlier. I apologize, but I'm good. My timing worked out for you.
I needed it. Josh, hey, thanks. Safe trip to Philly, by the way.
All right, take care. Thank you.
All right, and that they'll be at Wells Fargo tonight in Philadelphia for the NHL draft. We will come back with more in a moment, talking about last night's NBA draft. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet.
Reagan Street in Sunbury, where Buhner is currently hooked up intravenously. You like that, didn't you, sir?
I did. On News Radio. I think it's true.
Yeah. You're in news. You can find out. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. That's where we go to stock up for the weekend. Best in domestics, microbrews, imports, fresh hot roasted peanuts, snacks, soft drinks, pickle bar, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Well, I'll tell you right now, the student ticket sale here went phenomenally well. 21,000. They sold out. The freshman class sold out in 6 minutes. The junior class sold out in 35 minutes. Sophomore and senior classes all sold out. They sold all 21,000 seats this week for the students. We are at a period of time where it's been interesting. I've gone through the difficulties that some schools have had with the student sections. Even Georgia, here it is, the great SEC, where they'll tell you we're the most passionate fans in the world. Yeah, just listen to one edition of the Paul Feinbaum show, and you'll hear the most passionate fans in the world. Yet Georgia had a 29% no-show rate among their student body this year at games, and there you have 16,000 student tickets and not 21,000. Michigan is struggling tremendously right now. Michigan has also, they have 20,000 season tickets available for their student body. They sold 14,000. They can't sell out. Their student ticket sale continues. Penn State did theirs this week. Seniors on Monday, juniors on Tuesday, sophomores on Wednesday, freshmen on Thursday. They sold them all out. All 21,000. And the quickest were the freshmen in 6 minutes and the juniors in 35 minutes. I mean, remarkable to sell it out like that.
And I think that's a consistent thing for, I mean, hasn't it been sold out for years and years and years?
It is now over 40 consecutive years the student section's been sold out now. It's more than 40. I think it might be 42 consecutive years now that the student section has been sold out at Penn State. Remarkable. And now, ever since they've gone to this system, it's been minutes and not hours where it's been sold out. And, again, this is not to – I'm using Michigan only as a comparison. This is not meant to put down what's going on there. I'm just saying Georgia had no shows. Michigan had no shows. Michigan's having trouble right now selling season tickets. They put a different kind of plan in there. You have to be careful about what plans you put in. And I know for Penn State basketball, for example, they had a sit-down this week with 200 season ticket holders about, quote, the experience in the Jordan Center, because they're trying to get a better gauge as to what works and what doesn't work in there, you know, beyond obviously winning and losing basketball games. I mean, you know, everyone knows that's obvious, the number one thing. And Penn State basketball is having their elite camp this weekend. And that's going to be an important one because they have a lot of prospects there. The NBA draft took place last night, and there weren't that many surprises along the way. But this is what I don't get about the NBA, and I don't get it. I love Pat Riley's philosophy with Miami. Or anywhere else he's been. Pat Riley likes older, established players. That's why he drafted Mario Chalmers out of Kansas, who's been a really good player for him. That's why he made the deal last night to acquire Shabazz Napier, 4-year senior, who had been drafted by the Charlotte Hornets, but the Hornets did it in order to make the trade with Miami. That's what he does, and that is absolutely the model I agree with. The Sixers are a perfect example of this. Now, the Sixers did exactly the right thing. There are certain players you must draft. So Andrew Wiggins went 1, Jabari Parker went 2 to Cleveland and Milwaukee, respectively, and the Sixers drafted 3rd. Now, if I'm sitting in the 3 spot after Wiggins and Parker are gone, my choice is going to be Joel Embiid. And I know darn well that Embiid just broke bones in his foot. He's going to be out 6 months. I know he's had a back problem and so forth, but the potential of this guy is off the charts. Now, let's look at what else they did. They made a deal where they took their 10th pick, a point guard out of Louisiana Lafayette, and one other pick. And they ended up acquiring a player from, I want to say Serbia, that isn't going to be available for 2 years. I love to stash him away. What in the heck do I want that for? I know the NBA wants to go global, and the NBA's bragging today about, look, our first pick was from Canada, our third pick was from Cameroon, Embiid's from Cameroon, and Dante Exum, the fifth pick, is from Australia. So three of our top five picks are foreign players. Embiid played at Kansas, and so did Wiggins. Okay, I mean, that's some bonus.
Okay, I don't know about you, Sarah, but I think the University of Kansas is very much in America in terms of developing. I mean, did I miss something here?
Nope.
Dante Exum's from Australia. They kept going on and on about Patty Mills from San Antonio, who's also from Australia, where he is. But Patty Mills played 4 years at St. Mary's in California. Okay, that's where he became a really great basketball player. And I don't quite understand, unless it's a Dirk Nowitzki, why you go in that direction. Right? KJ McDaniels out of Clemson and Russ Smith out of Louisville are going to be two guys that are contributing for the Sixers right away. That's the kind of guy I want to draft. I would draft Adrian Payne in a heartbeat. Well, he's 22. So what? That's what the best years are, 22 to 32. Worst years are usually when you're 18 to 21. All right. Second hour of the show coming up. We're going to talk to Stephen Gross, the beat writer for the Allentown Morning Call, Philadelphia Phillies Talk, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.